B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
In terms of yards, in terms of yards per reception, and all that, and catches, that is well below average. You put at least average guys around him, and I think you see a much better, I think you see an elite quarterback. What? I think you see a quarterback, let's put it this way, that has the numbers to show you that he's elite.
Yeah, and that recipe is right in division. Mm-hmm. Look what Dallas did with Dak Prescott. They went out and they got Amari Cooper,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who's probably is an above average receiver. But then you also have Randall Cobb, who's that veteran possession guy. And then you have a nice young player. Imagine that, nice young player in Gallup. So they did all three things. They went and they got the number one guy, they got the veteran, you know, possession guy, and they brought up somebody. And look at that. Look at the numbers that Dak Prescott's putting up. Like it or not, the guy's having a really, really good year.
And also, too, they put a nice line in front of him.
No question. Mm-hmm. Nice line, running game.
That was one of the things that Doug mentioned yesterday as well, where, you know, yeah, you're trying to look for the big play, but then you have guys coming through with games and stunts, and, you know, which is disrupting what's going on. Doug sees what's going on, too, mm-hmm. is with this offensive line. You know, right now, I think every assistant coach in that building, right, especially on the offensive side of the ball, should feel a little heat in their seat.
I certainly agree.
Well, based on what you were telling me, by the way, you're listening to 97.5 The Fanatic WPN, Burlington, Philadelphia, broadcasting from the Xfinity Studio, only from Comcast. 7 o'clock hour brought to you by Univest Bank. Are you frustrated by escalating HR costs and legislative compliance? There's a simple solution. It's time for Univest Employee Benefits. Visit univest.net to set up your free benefits analysis today. So it comes out a lot down to coaching. And what you were saying before the break was that Carson is only being told to read one half of the football field, one side of it. Now, I pointed out when we were talking at the break, Nelson Agholor, the catch he made for about 19 yards in the fourth quarter, Carson dropped back immediately. As soon as he got the ball in his hands, he looked to his left and quickly came back to the right to hit Nelson Agholor down the hash marks, right? Mm-hmm. That was one of the rare occasions you would see him. I don't know if he was trying to look off of safety, if he really was going through a progression there or what it was, but it was one of the rare occasions that you saw him kind of go to once from one side of the field to the other,
mm-hmm.
where it was almost a split-second decision. It was within 2 seconds he seemed to get rid of that football.
Okay.
Everywhere else, it seemed like there was 4 seconds of, oh, what do I do with this? Either there's nobody open or I just can't figure out who I'm going to go to. So that was the rare occasion. Is he being told at all to look to the other side of the field?
The way I see it when I watch him play, it looks like he's always focused to one side of the field. So to me, that leads to me that in practice, they have him like, now, okay, this is how you do it in practice. You may have some 7-on-7 time where they'll just get out there with the receivers, get some DBs out there, they run through some stuff, they go through the routes or whatever. But then when you get the team period, when you're going against a defense, they want to get you through that. It's probably maybe 10 or 15 plays, maybe 20 plays that you're going to go through. And you're going to have some for the ones, and then you're going to have some for the twos. So they just want you to make you feel good. Get through it. You have your progression. So you're going to have whatever, if it's a two jet, whatever it is, you might throw a blitz into it, maybe, because you'll have a blitz period as well. But you're keeping them just, it's your first and two reads are over. If your first and two reads are over here, your eye is over here. You never get a chance to, if they take that two, those two away from you, to look to the other side, because they want you to, hey, good job, guys. Hey, we didn't drop a ball today. Hey, everybody caught the ball. Good focus. All right, let's move on. You know, it is what it is. And it's not just
not
the Eagles.
Disagreeing, right.
It's not just the Eagles. This is around the league sometimes, I think. And also, too, you see how when you have an offensive lineman, that if one of the guys go down, they rarely mix and match who your starters are. So you have Vitae probably hasn't taken any right tackle sets. Well, you know what? He probably has for the twos. So when he goes in and he does some scouts team stuff, he'll probably jump in and do a little right tackle. I don't know who their second group is. But, you know, he probably hasn't worked with Brandon Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure he hasn't gotten any practice time in with Brandon Brooks leading up to that.
Okay.
Because you always have your starting guys work together, so you never mix and match. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, you mess around and get another center in there with silent count. That might be a problem.
So
just don't mix and match.
Here's an issue I have, though. If you just taking last night's game, for example, the Monday Night Football game, you know how many receivers were targeted in that game in total? Both sides of the ball.
14.
20.
What was that? Oh, that was my pitcher. My bad. my pitcher fell.
That was great. I thought it was construction gone awry.
I snatched my suction cup up. The other suction cup I had, that suction cup is no good.
I thought it was breaking people's brains.
Yeah.
With 20 receivers last night were targeted.
Damn.
By Phillip Rivers and Patrick Mahomes. Wow. 20 were targeted in last night's game. So that tells me those guys are scanning the football field. They're not looking at one half of the football field going, all right, this is my guy and that's that. You don't target a total of 20, 10 by each team on average. I think it was 11 by the Chiefs and 9 by the Chargers. You're not getting to that number without going through your progressions. So that tells me Carson is struggling as well. Even if he's being coached, which is still stupid to me, but even if he's being coached, as you're saying, to look at one side of the football field, that's eliminating the progression for him. Unless it's either eliminating it or limiting it.
They're limiting it.
That's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, that's, but, yeah.
And if you're setting up such structured practices, like you're saying, Trey, all right, this is going to go here, that's going to go here, great job, nobody dropped the ball, let's go. You're taking away his ad-libbing. Mm-hmm. You know, ad-libbing, to its definition, is, you know, seeing what's there and then doing, you know, whatever comes out. But you kind of need to practice ad-libbing. You learn to ad-lib by scrimmaging. You learn by, oh, I can move here, I can move that. Oh, he'll go this way, I'll do that. It's like scrimmaging. You need to scrimmage to find out what you can do when you're not on a set play, how you adjust, how you ad-lib. It just seems to me the older he gets, the more the ad-libbing's getting taken away. And to me, it's harming him as a quarterback.
I think it limits him because that's one of the things that makes him special.
That might be the thing that makes him most special.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wait, but you have to force it in practice, though.
Yeah.
You have to force it in practice. You have to say, all right, you know what? And you can't have it programmed. He can't know that it's being forced. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So you can't have him like, all right, we're going to take away your first two reads. I want you to focus on getting on your third.
Yeah, because you're like, creating boom, a robotic, right,
you know.
Third, yeah.
So you need to make sure, like, hey, whoever's doing the scout team, make sure you take away our first two reads on this.
Sure.
Hey, these are the plays. Take away our first two, three reads. Make him look elsewhere. Because if not, he's just going to stay on that same rhythm.
I am fully concerned.
And
as if I wasn't already.
Yeah, as a defensive coach, Trey, which you were in your second year, I believe, right, with the Eagles?
Yes.
How easy would it have been if you know an offense is just concentrating on half of the field?
Oh, extremely easy.
That's what you want to do defensively.
Exactly.
As a defensive team, hey, let's keep, and I'm talking basketball certainly, but keep these guys on this side of the court, and this is what we're going to do. If a defensive coach, if I'm coaching football and I know that this offense is playing half the field, gravy, bring it.
Yeah.
It makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Let's get Frank up here, who's been holding in Doylestown. What's up, Frank?
Hey, guys. Good morning. Great conversation.
Thanks, man.
You know, Trey, I think you're right. I think it's coaching, but I also have to put some on Carson because this team is playing nothing like it played a few years ago with the way they're running their offense. We listened to Doug a few minutes ago talk about a big play, but from what I'm seeing on TV and a few games I've been to, tell me where these receivers are actually going downfield. Everything looks like it's within 20 yards cross. Everything's all bottled up. Everything's tight. And I believe Carson is focusing again on one receiver, and that's locking the defense in on a receiver. And Carson missed open receivers. He missed an out. He missed a wheel route, which this offense was phenomenal with a year or two ago. So I think you got to come back to the quarterback, too, and say, look, he's not as good as maybe what this offense is trying to do. And this coach now, Doug, is trying to run an offense around him. The bottom line is nothing's working because Doug's philosophy and Carson's ability, I think, are worlds apart.
It could very well be. The thing with focusing on one quarter, first, I like the idea because they don't have someone to stretch the field. When you try to stretch the field, it almost forces it. I understand taking a shot or two throughout the course of a game. But with Nelson Agholor, one of the things that was so encouraging was that you saw a screen to Nelson Agholor in, I think it was part of the third, yeah, it was part of the 16-play drive. And that made you feel like, okay, they're going to use Nelson Agholor where he needs to be used, and that's around the line of scrimmage. Because as we found out, yet again, another example of him being impossible for him to track a football, you saw later in the game he had that drop and couldn't track it. So keeping him around the line of scrimmage keeps him in his comfort zone. It also takes pressure off Carson because he knows that first read's going to be there if there's blocking. It was there. Then he also dialed up a tight end screen. There was a lot of encouraging things from Doug Peterson and his game plan early on. But as the game went on, you saw guys start to get exposed.
But the Patriots took that away.
Yes,
they
did.
Where was the adjustment? So what? So and if Nelson can run, which he can run, at least run him down the field, and maybe you can open Ertz up for 15, 20 yards on and out. And none of that happened like it used to happen. And I'm only comparing this offense with the offense 2 years ago, and where we could open that field up. But if we remember when Doug first came to town, everything was ding and dunk. Everything was 10, 15 yards. It's like he went back to that again. And I'm going to question Carson's ability about dropping dimes, about hitting wheel routes, about coming off a receiver. And I don't know if it's all coaching, Trey. I think it's some of the quarterback, too. I just think some things are really being exposed here, and it's scary. It really is scary.
Yeah, Frank, I'll say this. We all agree this was a horrible game for Carson. He played a terrible game, and I blamed him. After Doug Peterson and his scheme and game plan and lack of adjustments, I went to Carson Wentz as my second blame. That's what we did all day yesterday. And there was no sign that he was going to rally this team. And I was surprised a little bit by the people that are the apologists for Carson Wentz.
Mm-hmm.
No one really, got in our faces, so to speak. Well, he put the ball in Nelson Aguilar's hands at the end of the game. He could have tied it. Like, no. People watched the game for four quarters and went, ugh. This is not Carson's best. This is not
his best game.
This was not at all his best game.
610-632-0975,
610-632-0975. Coming up at 7. Oh, by the way, we're going to play Know the Show today, where you can win some Eagles Seahawks tickets.
Oh.
9:30, we're going to play Know the Show. We'll reference something at 9:30 that happened earlier in the show. If you know it, if you know the answer, we'll ask you a question. If you know the answer, you'll win Eagles Seahawks tickets, courtesy of the great people of Goldenberg's. Peanut Chews will also give you an update on our Twitter poll. Coming up, we'll let you hear from at 7:30. We'll let you hear from our from Donovan McNabb as part of our conversation yesterday. And Trey, you're going to walk us through this little study worldwide most attractive women.
Worldwide, wide, wide, wide.
Time of the Fanatic is 7:11.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5, The Fanatic.
All right, coming up 7:30, we'll let you hear Donovan McNabb saying, get Carson some help. Sunday's game. Still very, you watch the game again on a Monday, it just makes you feel like yesterday all over again. So watching Sunday's game, get the guy some help. Even though Carson, not exactly his most accurate. But real quick, Sam, what are the good people saying on our Twitter poll?
Our Twitter poll is brought to you by Window Nation. Take advantage of Window Nation's 50% off sale on all style windows, plus make no down payment with no payments and no interest for 12 full months. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com. This morning we asked, are you confident Carson Wentz will reach elite status if he had at least average receivers? We have just under 1,500 votes so far. 65% said yes, they are confident.
I'm surprised it's only 65%. And can I give people the benefit of the doubt for a second? I'm going to say that the people that are voting no are the people that I'm not going to just say, oh, they just want Nick Foles. I'm not going to go there because I don't want to revisit that conversation. But I'm shocked that only 65% think he'd be elite if he had at least average wide receivers.
There were a couple people tweeting in saying that in their definition of elite, it was making average receiver or below average receivers look better. So that was their argument.
How if he can't catch the ball?
I agree, but that's just what people are commenting.
I mean, he's put the ball in their hands. What else does he need to do?
That's the thing. I was the guy after the Lions game when there was like 9 drops, 10 drops in that game saying that Carson needed to be better too. Obviously, put the ball in the hands of the wide receivers. They need to make the play. But there are other throws, underthrowing Miles Sanders, for instance, on two occasions in that game, that he needed to make throughout. He also had an overthrow. I believe it was Matt Collins down the sideline.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, Carson, you got to be the guy to make that throw. Oh, he threw behind Matt Collins in the end zone. That was a throw that he needed to make on, I think, one of their first drives of the game. I got yelled at. Like, I get that he needs to, the wide receivers need to make plays, but I understand that a quarterback in the NFL, especially today, needs to make those players better. But if those players, A, don't want to be on the football field, and B, won't even catch the football, it's kind of hard to look at your quarterback and say, you make them better. Because other than, what, Trey,
loft the ball to him to try to make a catch? Yeah. What the hell else can he do?
I mean, this is football. It's not... I don't know. I'm pretty sure there's somebody that went out there and threw, had absolutely completed every ball. Maybe threw maybe 30 passes, with 30 for 30.
Somebody came close, I think.
I'm pretty sure.
I think like Montana went like 27 for 28 in a game or something.
Okay, yeah. So
I think Flacco actually might have the record. Wasn't it like 26 in a row or something like that?
Yeah, Donovan was there.
Donovan was close
too.
Once.
Yeah. You had Flacco, I had Schaub. Seriously, like two like just
local
kinda,
kids.
Yeah, and gangly. Gangly. And
so McNabb, I think, had 21 or 22 at one point.
And that was just in a game, though. Right?
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, it's managing mistakes.
But think of this too. If you watch a game, if you watch any game, a receiver from both teams at one point during the game is going to make a catch. And you say, "Oh, nice catch!" Oh, like a catch maybe that you didn't think he was going to make.
Yeah.
Every game you'll say that.
Uh-huh.
When was the last time you said that about an Eagles receiver? And all honesty, I can't remember this year. I mean, like, you got to go way back to say, oh, that's right. Alshon made a really nice catch on that play.
A spectacular catch.
Or just to like, wow, that was a really good catch. A catch that you didn't think he could make that he did.
I'll say this. The guy that has done that with some consistency, and it's not the time to give him a compliment because he missed the most recent game and he dropped three on third down in the previous game he played in. But Alshon has consistently made that leaning out of bounds, like Carson has thrown it to the only spot he can get it, like the only spot that his receiver can get, and Alshon is extended to make that play. It's not a spectacular catch, but it's making the play. It's going a little bit above and beyond to make the play for your quarterback.
Right, but
No.
Right. It's not that, oh, I didn't think he was going to get... It's, oh, nice catch because that's what Alshon does. Mm-hmm. But it's not that. I really can't recall a receiver on this team going up and getting the ball. You go, oh, man, nice catch.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't happen.
This doesn't happen.
Toe taps don't happen.
And it happens in every game.
Bobbled catches, toe taps, one-handed catches, all the stuff that when you watch the league is fairly common.
Mm-hmm.
Never see it here.
All
never.
Right. All right. Now,
it's a real issue with the way they evaluate wide receivers.
Or develop them.
Yeah.
Or develop them.
How they're coaching them.
Carson, or a combination of the two. It's bad.
I'll put it to you like this. We ripped Carson Walsh throughout the last week, especially telling us how great Mac Hollins was and all that stuff, right? That he grades well, all the pluses and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
To see the first thing come out going into last week about how he's the most vocal guy at practice now, that tells me that somebody said something to him.
Mm-hmm.
That man is in some hot water.
Hot seat.
A little hot water for himself right now.
And real quick, to get back to Trey's thing, I hate to even bring this up, but do you know who's the record for tied for the record leader of most consecutive passes completed in a game?
Oh, God.
It's Nick Foles. He's tied with Rivers and Ryan Tannehill because he did it last year. It ended in the Redskins game when he completed a pass to Golden Tate. It was his 25th consecutive pass completion in a row.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
Awesome.
That's great. And I didn't want to... I wasn't trying to bring him up. I was just looking up consecutive completion record.
Jay, we're taking the rest of the show off.
I'm sorry. I didn't want to do that.
Play a best of from like a month ago. I don't know.
But I opened the page on NFL.com and it was like, Nick Foles, 25th, ties Tannehill and Rivers for most consecutive... And I was like, oh, why did it have to be him?
Oh, God, okay.
Why did it have to be him?
So everyone take a moment. Collect yourself.
But you have to give the information no matter what.
I know.
Right. You have to release it.
That's
you
what we do.
You should have just said a former Eagles quarterback. Damn it. Anyway,
that's too good that it's him.
All right, well, Trey, you were doing a study, and Sam, you're still in the mic there, Sam. You're still
correct.
There?
Okay, I'm good. Here.
All right, I might need you for this one here. So yeah, sorry, Trey, you weren't doing the study, but you were reading.
I was reading a study.
Well, let's. I mean, we've all done a study.
Trey's out on Market Street. Like, there's one, there's two, three. I've only seen one guy. That's 4-1.
Where do you hail from? Where do you hail from?
What's your parish?
That's the. Do people still use that in the bars and stuff?
I don't know. Oh, God, yeah.
What parish from, hon?
Well, I mean, people our age do. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if the if the 20-somethings.
I've never once heard that.
You're from like.
You just said the 20-somes. I'm 24.
You're not from Philly.
Yeah, you're correct. Outside.
Yeah. So you're not a parish girl.
same Monica. Anyway, Trey, go ahead. What is the study you came across?
So I came across this study that had the top 25 top 25 areas that the beautiful women have come out of. So they ranked these women from whichever areas that they're from.
Uh-huh.
So we're just going to cut down to, like, let's go from 11. 11 down. 11 is Italy.
Italy has the most beautiful. So these are countries, not cities. These are countries. Italy's 11th?
Italy. Don't get offended.
Take that, Bart.
Come on, offended.
This offense right now.
This is bogus.
Where are you at, Ireland?
No. I was really looking forward to this. I hadn't seen it. This is totally erroneous, bogus study, obviously.
No, this is Italy's not 25. I mean, 11 is good.
No, it's not.
There's a lot of countries in this world, Mark.
Yeah, but not Italy's number one, okay? Number one.
That's slight bias.
No bias. I'm half Polish. What are you talking about?
Now, the Polish, I'll say, is
Spain was pretty phenomenal.
They say Italian women continue to set the bar for what glamour and sex appeal look like.
Apparently not. 11.
11.
It's a low bar, but they said it.
You know, it's there. 10. South Africa.
Oh.
The women of the Rainbow Nation.
Candace Swainpole's from there.
Yeah, Charlize Theron.
Are known for finding the perfect balance between having a certain ferocity tempered with incredible manners.
Ooh, okay. That'd be nice.
And be like nice that, about you know it. I feel like they produce tall drinks of water down there, too.
Yeah, you know. Yeah.
I know a girl from down there. She's a half pint. She's a small
They call those schooners in Australia.
Speaking of Australia, that's probably on the list. Go ahead, Trey.
So 9, Philippines.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. All right, that's pretty solid.
Yeah, I saw skin tones.
I still haven't heard anything better than Italy, but go ahead.
Crossroads of East Asian and Pacific Islanders.
All right.
With some Spanish thrown in the mix. 8.
Whoever did this study really missed out on you reading the description. Like, yes. It should be like you click on it and it's you reading aloud to the audience. Yes.
8 is India. India is filled with incredibly diverse women whose striking beauty is only highlighted by the incredibly bright colors of jewelry they often choose to wear.
See, I'm surprised they're not a little higher, just, I mean, if it wasn't for the Kama Sutra in itself. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that should be high.
Yeah. So I'll say right now, Italy and India. Cool. Yeah. Italy and India have been grossly underrated by this list, but go ahead.
7 is USA.
Woo woo!
Right. So we're just going to...
Particularly Coatesville, Sam. Coatesville.
Since that was a remark, we're just going to move on to 6.
I would expect all the United States to be higher, though, because we're such a beautiful melting pot.
We're a mixture,
Yeah. Like, we're an all-star team.
There's a lot of hideous people in this country.
We're also, like, the fattest country.
Yeah, plus the... Yeah, we're fat.
What does Chris Rock say? Of course we're fat. We're rich. Like, compared to some of these other places. All right, wow. The United States, I would consider us to be an all-star team. We're all like the top talent of other countries have come to like
we
form
are
the all-star
diverse.
Team.
It's like the old Seinfeld bit.
What's that?
How many people would you say are good-looking in this country? And they're like 7, 10%. And he's like, have you seen? Have you been outside? Have you looked at people?
6. Netherlands.
That is strong.
To be just as brutally honest as they are gorgeous.
Ooh. I was there like a year and a half ago, and wow.
I've never seen somebody from the Netherlands.
It's real.
You refer to like their Sasquatch, Sam. Like,
I've never seen an alien.
Never seen before.
5. Yeah. Sweden.
Yeah.
Said that after centuries of raiding lands, the Vikings took home with them and only the most beautiful women they could find.
Sweden stuff, that's pretty solid.
That's a good one.
4, Colombia.
That's true.
Yeah, let's see.
You know, with all the, like, the
Andes Mountains to the Caribbean coast, there are so many different regions in Colombia, each with its own culture.
Yeah.
But one thing rings true across the country. Colombia is known to be home to some of the most beautiful women on earth.
I don't disagree. I haven't been there, but I don't mean there's like people. I don't know. If you're watching Narcos, a lot of it's in Colombia, for instance. Spectacular looking ladies, and I'm the person that's like IMDb-ing to see where people are from. They're all Colombian.
3 is the Ukraine.
Huh.
Yeah. Third place, Ukraine.
Third. Okay, Ukraine more than Italy.
keep the field strong.
I don't know why you're so offended by this.
I know,
just,
really.
My God. Yeah, they say Ukraine.
I just find it the flaw that the study itself points out where the bar is set, and they have them as 11.
The study is telling
erroneous.
Me.
Okay.
And for whatever reason, my phone keeps dropping what's going on here.
Ukraine, so I'm not saying they're not
three
beautiful.
Is Ukraine.
Okay.
And then let's see. The two is Brazil.
That's true.
Yeah. It's famous for the rapid rhythm of the carnival, for the swaying sounds of samba, the melting pot. Of the Brazilian women are renowned.
I met a Brazilian woman over the weekend. She was very lovely.
There you go. There you go. And then number one, Venezuela. With a stunning 7 Miss Universe wins and 6 Miss World wins. The statistics just don't lie.
All right, that's a good backup. That's good supporting argument for Venezuela.
There you go.
Yeah. I just don't understand how you could describe Italy as setting the bar and have them not even in the top 10.
Because they're average and then you have them above. No, I'm just kidding. Get it?
Damn,
we're talking about Carson Wentz average, so like...
That's thank you, Sam. Play yes, Carson understood. Wentz. Yeah, I don't understand it. That's a very interesting list, though.
There you go.
I thought we lost weight as a city, though, because we were talking about how we're all fat as Americans, whatever. I thought, did Philadelphia drop a little bit in terms drop some LBs?
We're presenting beautifully.
Is that what we're doing now?
Yeah, no. We need a list of most attractive cities in U.S.
Gabe Kapler leaving doesn't help us. I'll just say that.
He brought down the body mass index by like 10% when he left.
He's not even a person by body mass index.
our weight as a city skyrocketed when Gabe left.
Yeah. Let's get to Al in Southampton. Al, what's on your mind, buddy?
Yeah, how you doing, guys?
Good, buddy. Right. Thanks, man.
Hey, I don't know how he gets out of it, but I think it's all Doug's play calling. And... you know, I can go back to 17. The first two games we played, which even we had Frank Reich there, but they look like all the games that we've been playing lately because Doug won't run the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back then, they had to tell them to run the ball, the players, which I think is ridiculous. The players had to tell the coordinator what to do.
Yeah, like, let's put it like this. One of the greatest, if not the greatest play ever in Eagles history, Philly special, called by Nick Foles. Doug Peterson, over the last couple of years, even the Super Bowl year, it was after the second game of the season against the Chiefs, where everybody to a man in that locker room said they needed to balance out the run-to-pass ratio. Doug then did that. You referenced Lane Johnson telling him he's got to run the football. Why does a head coach need to be told that many times to his players? Now, I'll credit this. Good to be able to listen to your players and make that adjustment in-game, but why do you need to hear that time and time again as a play caller, as a head coach? Why don't you have a better feel for that?
My other point is, too, that, you know, if you're a good coach, you're going to work to your roster. And, like, the first game against Atlanta, you know, all your receivers go down and you continue to pass. The game Sunday was windy and you continue to pass when you had running backs averaging 5 yards a carry.
Yeah, I don't get it. And he talked about thanks for the call. He tried to get to the big play, and we played it for you earlier, Doug Peterson talking about how he needed to wait for that big play. It wasn't coming by way of the pass. There's nothing that this offense has done to show you that it was going to be by way of the pass. If anything, it was going to be a screen pass, which would have been to Miles Sanders, who's still, I think, your best playmaker on the field. And for whatever reason, you didn't get him the football.
What was his injury? Because they said he had to go in the tent.
Yeah, I thought it
was
it
head?
I thought it was head.
Tim said on the postgame show with me that, he went in for a head consultation.
Well, he came back into the game.
But he came back in and they just didn't use him.
So what the hell, bro?
Doug did say in the press conference, Bill took that away from us. He admitted it.
Uh-huh.
He was like, he knew that was our explosive guy and... they took it away.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, cool. No counterpunch to that?
So they were...
good point. No counterpunch. And that's where I find fault an awful lot.
Did they need to get in-game to realize that Bill Belichick probably wanted to take Zach Ertz and Miles Sanders away from them?
Exactly. And, look, if you look at Doug Peterson since 17, and what's the thing that overrides you with everything? It's... a going for it on fourth, or gutsy Doug, or Doug looks to make this type of big play. Is the in-game stuff really satisfying you?
No.
Because it's a 500 team, except for that, 17 season. And I know it's tough to say except for that 17 season. But, if I'm breaking down every game, I'm kind of head-scratching. The preparation going in, are they changing things during a game? Jamie, you talk about that he does make, you know, at halftime adjustments. To me, the halftime adjustment is, yeah, they come out and they run an offense where they split running and split passing, take 9.5 minutes off the clock and go down and score a touchdown. Why does that have to be adjusted? Why can't that be your normal offense?
I don't know.
And you really didn't need to have a big play because you were only down by a score. So it's not like you're down by multiple touchdowns. I mean, just run your offense. Let's go ahead and pound the ball. Work your way down the field. They tried to run some, bring an extra lineman in. You bring in Dillard. But he struggled, especially when he went extra lineman and he had to be over on the right side. Yeah. And, you know, and that's one of the things, too, that, you know, a lot of people are like, well, hey, man, now that Lane is down, you know, hey, can we just train Dillard to go over there and play right tackle? It's not as easy as everybody thinks it is.
Yeah, that makes you nervous.
To just switch over and just play the opposite side. Unless he's been working out of a right stance for a while, that is extremely tough. If you want to get it, if you're right-handed, then write your name with your right hand and then pick up the pen and write your name with your left hand. That's like telling a batter that's right-handed to swing, that switch right over and be like, yeah. It's not as easy as you think. Everything is backwards. And you mess around and you put that young man out there against Clowney, And you know, and he hasn't been in a right-handed stance for a while. Man, all right. Okay. I'm glad we make it look that easy. It's not that easy.
Yeah. All right. I promise. We're going to get to this Donovan McNabb sound in a little bit here. We got Mike in KOP. What's up there, Mike?
Hey.
Hey, buddy.
Guys?
Hey, Mike.
Yep.
Yeah. Hello?
Yes.
Hey. Hi, Mike.
Oh, sorry. Sorry about that. My wife just called. So, hey.
What did she want?
Quick, to make sure if I had to give a preschool check today a daycare check, you know, they're expensive. You guys will find out at some point.
Oh, the actual check itself. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. No, my checks start going in February, Mike. I'm aware.
Yeah. So just a write-in vote for, gorgeous women in the world. Afghani women are some of the most ridiculously good-looking women I've ever had the pleasure of dating.
Interesting.
Afghani.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to see where they are on this list here.
Yeah, Middle Eastern, Afghani, Persian, whatever you want to call them, they're amazing.
I did make the top 25 list here.
I do enjoy the Persian reference. I like the
Their eyes are just like, they will make you just feel stupid how good they, like, if you just look at them, they just like, they'll just melt you.
Okay.
But anyway, Carson Wentz, it's okay that we have a quarterback who's just good to very good. I don't think he's elite. And if you want to measure elite, we can say Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers. They're the standard for what an elite quarterback is. And our quarterback isn't that. Like,
I forgot Russell Wilson.
Yeah, it's okay if our quarterback isn't that. You just have to put the right players around him and give him talent, which Howie Roseman doesn't do. He refuses to draft anybody with speed. He likes tall, slow receivers who can jump but can't run. He likes slow cornerbacks that are injured, Sidney Jones. I mean, he likes running backs with chicken legs, Donnell Pumphrey. Like, these are the picks that we're getting to give Carson Wentz talent. And that's the problem. Like, you can X and O to death, but if you don't have the athletes around your quarterback, you're not going to win the games. And that's the problem. And, like, Carson Wentz doesn't have to be elite to win a Super Bowl. He can be good to very good and still get us there. It's the problem is that we have no talent around him.
No, I agree wholeheartedly, Mike, and thanks for the call. That's kind of what Donovan was getting to, and we'll let you hear what that was coming up in a few here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Can't believe some of the responses on our Twitter poll. Get back to it in 1 second. Also, let's hear from Donovan McNabb. But Mike and Del Rand's been holding. What's up, buddy?
Yep.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, I'd love to see the ugliest 25 countries in the world. That's my favorite. Give me where everybody gets a
shot.
Yeah, I'll tell you one of them, Mike. I'll tell you one of them. Cowboy country. Am I right?
am I right? you know what? So I may have told some of you guys may know that my wife's a Patriots fan and her family's all Patriots fans. Mm-hmm. I'm watching the game. And the first half, I was doing all the jaw jacking, talking trash. Then the second half, I couldn't do it anymore. Listen, I mean, you lose the Patriots, you hold them to 17 points. That's a good game, right? But our receivers suck. We know that. They're butt cheeks. All right? We talk about it every week. Uh-huh. That's nothing new. Doug Peterson's play calling, sketchy sometimes. We know that. We talk about it every week. Carson Wentz has to win games. Even though he may be putting the ball where these guys are dropping him, there's plays that he's not. There's plays where he's standing back in that pocket where he has all the time in the world where he just needs to run. Mm-hmm. Look at what Lamar Jackson's doing in Baltimore. Look at the stat sheet from the receivers over the weekend against that game against the Texans. They're not lighting the world on fire. Those wide receivers aren't Pro Bowl wide receivers. But Lamar Jackson had 89 rushing yards. He had more rushing yards than our entire offense did all game on Sunday.
Yeah.
Carson Wentz has the ability to do that. Put the ball down and run. Take control of the game. Be a superior quarterback. Be one of these best quarterbacks in the league. Because if you can't do it with your receivers, you got to find a way. And that's how great quarterbacks are made. Find a way.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. I want to see him rely on some of his athleticism. And yeah. I know it was a bad game and they lost the game, but the Vikings game, you saw him pull that ball back in a read option situation and he ran it for 20 yards. Where's that? Let's see a little bit of that. He has shown multiple times now that when he is running, he does get down. In the Bills game, did he stay up a little bit longer than he should have and take a hit? Yes. But for the most part, you've seen him slide or dive, try to get that extra yard, whatever it might be. He has been a smarter quarterback in that regard. The only game that I really looked at and went, wow, Carson does not give, he gives zero you-know-whats about staying healthy, is the Falcons game, when he really felt like he had to do everything because everything was so last minute with receivers being out of that game early. So he felt like he had to do everything in that particular game, even more so than we're used to seeing.
He sucked for like three quarters of that game.
He was very bad. He was, no question, very bad. If you are going to blame a loss on injury, as I've been saying really since that one, that's a loss. You can look at injury and go, well, it was right before the game. Like yeah. Dallas, like I believe yeah. Doug when he says the run game, like you had to wipe out half the plays because Dallas Goedert wasn't there. Like I believe yeah. that you couldn't go through that much of an adjustment at that short a time.
Same time he had the game winning.
You should have won. It was in the hands of Nelson Aguilar. Yeah. We know when. Yeah. yeah.
So he's had, like, one of the marks of a great quarterback is, does he always have his team in position to win a game? You know, you don't get blown out. You come back. You crawl. It could be ugly. It could be a bar fight. But are you in position to win the game? And as bad as it is, he has them in position to win games a lot of the time.
They're still very close games.
I hate to simplify it that much, but there's something to that.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I feel like in watching Carson, in watching Doug, and I know they're 5-5. I know the Cowboys are one game better than them right now.
Yeah, with a tough game on Sunday. With
a tough game on Sunday. I just can't help but feel like it's almost a lost season.
Wow. It's not there yet. Really? It's not there yet.
I feel like
it's getting close.
But we watch the same problems week in and week out, and there's no signs of anything getting
better. Well, I mean, Alshon coming back and Jordan Howard coming back change a lot.
Okay.
They do. I mean,
they're better players. Yeah, look, they're better players.
Yeah.
So there's that. I just feel like right now, just from the outside, looking at this team and the way they've been playing, it's almost stuff that I feel like can't be corrected within the rest of the season.
There's
like
a good chance it's not.
You have to have these games literally. And then look, they're playing awful opponents the rest of the way. You have to have these games handed to you as the season goes on after the Seahawks. Games handed to you. And we know one game is not going to be handed to them, and that is going to be the Cowboys game.
Yeah. I think they can go out and win those games. I don't know if they're worse than the Miamis, the Washingtons, the Giants, mm-hmm. that it's going to be handed
to them. I'd like to think they're not.
But, you know, I brought this up in the 5 o'clock hour, Mark. I was reading Marcus Hayes today, and he basically said, you know, Carson Wentz, this was a game he should have gone out and won. And, of course, $128 million followed that.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is the game you expect him to go out and win. But one of his lines was, 6 games remain, but honestly, they feel irrelevant. Are we there?
I'm not irrelevant. Because, I mean...
And I know what Marcus was saying. Uh-huh. It wasn't just, oh, as of right now, forget it, you know, season's over.
Yeah.
It's more like, well, if things keep going this way, if Carson Wentz is this year, maybe it is. And my God, that hit me like, oh my God, don't say that. No.
But not even just looking at Carson, but just the rest of the team.
Well, it's all encompassing, I think.
Because again, going in the blame game from after the game Sunday, it's Doug and then it was Carson. But Doug has been on that list far more than Carson has this year in terms of why they've lost games.
Yeah.
The lack of adjustment within. Lack of adjustment within the game. You look at Doug and you go, what's going on here? Like, where's the scheme going into the game that doesn't have your team prepared? Like, people will talk about the difference between him and Andy Reid. The difference between him and Andy Reid is that within the game, Doug is supposed to be a better adjuster to the game plan. Going into the game, 6 days a week, Andy Reid was a better game planner. But when the you-know-what hits the fan, Doug was the guy that was able to, you know, kind of rally the troops again and then get back out there. Andy hadn't been able to do that, at least not when he was here in Philly. So when you look at the team from afar and you see the mistakes that they make, very rarely do you see them start to make that adjustment in game that we've been able to rely on Doug for in the past. Now, I want to get this in because it talks about helping the quarterback out. Donovan McNabb, when he was on with us at 9:30 yesterday, talked about that, Jamie, as you called it, that superhero gene, trying to save the day.
Yeah, he's got the hero gene, and I think it hurts him.
So Donovan got into that with us yesterday, talking about, you know, trying to help out a guy like Carson Wentz.
I think they played hard. I think execution-wise, it was too inconsistent. I wouldn't put all the pressure on Carson, but I think obviously he can play better. He'll tell you that himself. But you have to be able to take pressure off of Carson by running the football. But at the end of the day, this is your franchise quarterback. You have to take pressure off of him. It's not taking anything away from his ability. It's just sometimes you got to help him.
Where is the guy? Like in football, you talk about a lot with receivers, Trey, coming back to the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Come back to the ball. Like where's the guy trying to make that play for Carson?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's the thing, too. Like, everybody wants Carson to walk on water and just come out here and lift everybody up, make everybody better. Well, you know what? Some days, you just don't have it. It might be a bad game. So I need you to lift me up. Where's that?
Good point.
Where's that? Where's that? I mean, this is a team sport. So sometimes he might be a little off. Where are the guys that's lifting him up?
Mm-hmm.
When he has put the ball in good situations and they didn't make a play, they let him down. All right, then, you know what? I need a little lifting right now because I'm struggling. Who's going to help me?
Mm.
Nobody. So, I mean, come on. I mean, you know, everybody can sit up there, oh, he has to be. Think about even your job that you're going to right now. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, like you have it perfect every day. Come on, stop that, man.
Yeah.
Stop it. Hey, stop that.
Hey, I work with you guys. I have a great day.
Yeah, everybody, oh, my God, he has to be perfect all the time. It's going to be mistakes. I mean, that's football. It's managing mistakes.
You know, we've talked about what do you do when things are starting to go bad? Do you try to simplify them or do you make them more complicated? I think you try to simplify things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I don't know if throwing the ball 17 out of 18 times or dropping back to throw was simplifying. So I look, I say, all right, what's my strength? We talk about playmakers. Carson Wentz, your biggest playmaker on offense.
97.5, The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.